We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Radio.com.
Well enough, and he's spending it for 3 years now, and he's played with some of these guys, you know, the two tackles and Kenny and Drake. You know, he's been with those guys for multiple years now. I think those guys are all comfortable together. And then some of the new guys, when they've come in, they've embraced what we've been doing. And I just like the way that we're operating. I think there's some things that we're going to clean up and we're going to feel better about probably 4 weeks from now. And we'll look back on this game and wish we would have done better. But, you know, it's just, it feels right. It feels like we're heading the right direction. And you know, we're going to have to make the corrections on this one and then get to the next one.
Those the thoughts of the Miami Dolphins head coach Adam Gase after his team's performance on a Monday press conference. And for me, one of the things that you leave that game with, Chris Whittingham and Ira Winderman in for Joe and Zach this morning, one of the things that you leave that game with is a sense that I always measure offense, particularly in the NFL, in how frequently you're moving the ball, how frequently you're in the red zone. Because, okay, the Dolphins had 7 points at halftime yesterday on Sunday, but they were in the red zone two more times. And yes, obviously turning the ball over on downs isn't ideal,
right?
But it shows that you were there to begin
chance.
With. Right.
They had the opportunity.
Like you know, I heard people that were saying, yeah, okay, they scored 27 points, but seven of that was on a return. The offense wasn't as good as you think, but they were constantly moving the ball downfield. There was really only a couple of drives that were fairly quick and they were over quickly and they didn't move the ball at all. And that is kind of the meant to be the strategy behind going for quick passes, quick movements, is because you want to be able to engineer the ball downfield. And the Dolphins did that next to I'm not going to say every time, but close to every time they had the ball. They at least got a couple of first downs and were moving the ball downfield. And that, for me, is all I want out of this Dolphins offense, is be constantly moving. Because how many times have we seen in the Tannehill era in particular, them not be able to do
the
that?
Three and out, and even the plays when they gave it to Gore, and you thought, okay, those are sort of the Jay Ajayi plays. They're going to settle for 2-3 yards, and Frank kept busting those plays.
Yeah.
And how encouraging was that?
Yeah.
That, I mean, look, I think the biggest eye-opener of that game, and you could say it's Tannehill and the long ball, and you could talk about other elements, and obviously Rashad Jones, we're familiar with. He's going to come up with big plays. Mika Fitzpatrick coming in his nickel situations and being put in tough spots and taking care of it. But to me, the Frank Gore thing was eye-opening,
yeah,
Revelatory almost, because you expected nothing. I mean, am I correct in that? Sort of mostly over-the-hill kind of guy, what we've seen mostly until Sunday from Adrian Peterson, sort of the resurrection that sort of is over.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where I think people were expecting someone who can maybe kind of move the chains for you, like to sort of get you 3-4 yards when you need,
or buy time to give Drake a breather.
Right. Like, I think you could expect a credible backup running back, but and for a guy who's 35, like you might have expected for the wheels to fall off, because it can't happen 1 year to the next. But I think maybe what's happened is that playing in Indianapolis last year behind a quarterback situation that was totally screwed up, and the last few years behind an offensive line that has been flatly bad, is that maybe Frank Gore could have been a 1,000-yard rusher even more than he has been, like been actually more of an upper echelon running back if he played for a decent offense, and that Frank Gore has actually been held back in his 30s. Rather than, I think a lot of people have been impressed that he's managed to sustain his production in his 30s. He might actually have been held back the last few years. And you saw when given the opportunity, for me, the first down and 20 play was massive. They get inside the red zone. They get a holding penalty because Laremy Tunsil got beat. And the only way that he wasn't going to get Ryan Tannehill killed was to hold.
And you figured the drive was over.
Right. And I mean, and it's one of the things that I wanted to mention, and we did in the pregame show, was how often first and 20 is just a drive ender for the Dolphins. Like it has been.
And or first and 15 right, with all those pre-snap penalties they've had.
First and 15 or any sack or anything like that that leads you sort of going backwards. I think it's really been a case where the Dolphins have just never been able to recover when they've been put in those situations. And the fact that it wasn't just on Ryan Tannehill to go and do that, that Frank Gore could make that happen on the first down play, which eventually led to the touchdown, it's absolutely huge.
Should I count on Frank Gore going forward? Although, is that a danger?
No. I really think that you can, because it's not like this is a player who's shown that he's not injury prone, at least as a pro. He's not injury prone. And I think this is someone who clearly, from everyone who is talking about it in preseason, that he looks 25, he doesn't look, he looks like he's in really good shape and still looks like the Frank Gore that you remember, and that you're not asking him to run the ball 20 times. You're asking him to spell Kenyon Drake, who's really going to be the standout running back. So I think the Dolphins and offensive line significantly improved year over year. They only gave up the one sack and were constantly creating holes. Like, I think you can really expect Frank Gore to be a real contributor for this team.
And then if we talk about injury concerns or not injury concerns, I have one other question here. I'm wondering if you feel injecting back in helps or just replaces what they already have, and that's Devontae Parker. And I know that he can be that unique go-up-and-get-the-ball kind of player that when the pass isn't...
He can, but he never has been.
But he's expected to be.
Right, exactly.
So the pass that's not perfect, he's the one who'll get it. Now that you see what Jakeem Grant can give to you, obviously Wilson's possibilities got him involved in a running play also. They're trying to utilize his speed in that situation also. Amendola is going to be the safety valve sort of guy anyway. Devontae Parker healthy does make you better or just replaces something that's pretty good?
I would say I feel like I like the look of the Dolphins because who is he displacing?
Well, that's what I'm saying. You have Kenny Stills, you have Jakeem Grant, you have Albert Wilson, and you have Amendola. So you have those four.
I feel like that group is complementary. Now, it's missing the big play element. It's missing height, frankly. It's missing someone who is
a go-up-and-get-the-ball kind of guy.
A prototypical number one. So in theory, you introduce Devontae Parker and it adds something different. But I almost feel like the homogenous way that this Dolphins receiving core looks right now kind of works for them. It works towards them trying to do one thing really well, which is yards after catch, which is creating space. For me, one of the revelations of that first game is, to me, the mark of a good skill position player is making the first man miss. It felt like every time Albert Wilson touched the ball, he managed to do it. Like he... And Kenny Stills going deep, Jakeem Grant with his ridiculous speed, and now this kind of newfound toughness where you can throw him a slant on second down and seven. He'll get you a first down, lowering his shoulder into the middle of the field. Like, you wouldn't expect it from a guy of that size.
A speed guy, right?
Right, you would expect him to have more of a finesse game. I feel like he has a power game that's a bit underrated. It feels like that collection of receivers has a way that they can play that if you introduce Devontae Parker, it kind of changes things a little bit.
At any point in that game, when you were sitting there for 9.5 hours, did you even remember that Devontae Parker wasn't out there, wasn't active, and wasn't available?
Not only did I not forget it, did I ever feel like the Dolphins' offense or passing offense was limited or couldn't do what it needed to do because it didn't have him out there?
I forgot he wasn't out there because everything was more than acceptable and you seemingly had what you needed anyway.
Which was precisely the point of signing two receivers. Not just letting Jarvis Landry go, but bringing it... Because I think when they signed Albert Wilson and Danny Amendola basically within hours of each other, and I was like, well, hang on a second. I understand that you've got this money now that you're not giving to Jarvis Landry because the Browns gave him $80 million and you didn't want to do that. Not only do you have those resources available, but you're going to commit them to two receivers when it kind of felt like one of the areas where the Dolphins had not a surplus, but a collection of useful players was at wide receiver, and you're allowed to anyway. You still decide that we're going to bring in two players to fill in the spot vacated by one, and I think it was precisely for that reason, because Adam Gase and this Dolphins front office no longer want to be caught with their pants down relying on a player who cannot be relied upon.
He's so injury prone. And the other thing I wanted to get to, you mentioned this in the previous segment, the lack of a sellout, the uncertainty of the fans, people holding back and waiting and seeing. And we heard the clip at the top of the hour here, and I listened to the entire press conference yesterday when he did show a personality at moments, but when you have an Adam Gase type of coach, a little bit sarcastic, a little bit cautious in his press conferences, and you compare that to, even though they lost and were hellaciously bad in the second half, a John Gruden type of coach who we've seen throughout the preseason. Obviously, ESPN playing it up. Their interview they did with him, I listened to a little bit of his post-game press conference driving in.
The clip before the game, revving up the black
hole.
The whole
big deal and the whole Raider BS that's basically largely proven to be nothing, but... does Adam Gase have more responsibility to sort of motivate the fan base? I mean, I think at every turn, Adam Gase has sort of been pulling back a little bit. He's not that guy. Not that you have to be that guy also.
No, I feel like it's there, though. I feel like he's got real legitimate personality, but I feel like NFL coaches feel the need that, like, I can't show that stuff
in
public.
You watch the post-game press conferences, and obviously we run a lot of the sound on the station, and when he comes out, it's like... I don't want to say joyless, but I, as a fan, I need to pull on to something. I need to have you drag me along. I need it to be meaningful. I know it's BS in a lot of cases, and football coach can be that rah-rah guy, and there are the Ed Orgerons out there. You don't understand what they're saying, but my God, the guy's enthusiastic about it. I think that's part of it also is I wish he wasn't as reserved. It seems like he has a really good sense of humor.
Yeah.
And you hear that in just about every press conference. There's that one moment when he opens up a little more, everything they went through on Sunday and the appreciation of finding a way to get through and not making an excuse. But I don't know. It just seems like if you had a little bit more of that with Don Shula, it was defiance. With Parcells, you know, in his coaching days and Jimmy Johnson, it was the big personality.
It was the brashness.
I think fans want a little of that also.
Well, I think, and that's something that really the Dolphins struggle with now. Again, we're talking about selling tickets. We're talking about getting people through the door. I mean, we were mentioning as it relates to Dwayne Wade potentially coming back, like, whose face are you putting on the billboard?
Right.
What's the draw? And if the team isn't going to be championship good, which even if they get off to a good start here and they beat the Jets and they beat the Raiders and all of a sudden they're 3-0, like, I don't think anyone is really going to be that convinced that this is going to be a championship quality team.
Because we've seen this movie before.
Right.
Yeah.
And you just know, right? Like, you know that...
New England's better.
Right. You know that Los Angeles last night, winning by 20 on the road, like, that's what championship quality teams... And you have a talent base, and I feel like that was one of the concerns going into the years. This team just didn't have the talent that made you think they could be championship good, but... I do think that there's also that absence of characters, right? There's that absence of...
personality,
right, like, if the Dolphins had Jalen Ramsey, it would create a sense of, oh, we're in the national conversation because we have this guy that's constantly sticking his face and his mouth into the national conversation.
And that's the point, because you do the 7.5-hour Dolphins pregame show.
Yeah.
So when you say coming up an interview with...
Yeah.
Who's that guy? Who's that guy that you say to yourself, oh, Channing, hold on, I want to listen to this. I didn't record this. I want to hear what he has to say. Who's that guy in the Dolphins?
I mean, William Hayes, because he says crazy things sometimes. Because he's like, you know, because he'll like go off on some, you know, conspiracy theory that he has. Like, in terms of bright characters, like, he might represent one of the few players that actually, you know, has had public moments that end up getting wrecked, like his appearances on Hard Knocks.
But that's like you're saying,
you're on pregame, like, that's not a pregame material. That's like, you know, quirky, you know, like
right,
quirky things to know about a player material.
We have the exclusive only here QAM interview with.
Yeah.
There's not that guy on this team like there would be on other teams.
Right.
Where you just have to hear
and
this
some
guy.
Of that's football. Football just isn't conducive to this. But some of it is because the Dolphins don't have those standout characters or players that have that pedigree.
I mean, Jarvis Landry turned into it on Hard Knocks,
and
was that here to a degree.
No doubt, but I do think that, like, not having a player that fans want to go through the door to go and watch, it makes a real impact. And I think that hopefully as the year goes on, you'll see Kenny Stills break out, and you'll see Kenyon Drake break out and become those kinds of players. But
can
going
Ryan
into the
Tannehill
season,
ever become that, or is it too far down the road?
No, I think it's too. He's 30.
He's your Matthew Stafford. He's just sort of there.
Yeah. Oh, I think Matthew Stafford's a little bit better than Tannehill is. Like, and I think Stafford's like kind of towards the high end of those quarterbacks. Like, they're not leaders.
The middle third.
Yeah, they're middle third guys. I'd say Stafford's like among sort of the top of that group. Chris Whittingham, Ira Winderman, in for Joe and Zach here on QAM.
Radio.com.
Chris Whittingham, Ira Winderman in for Joe and Zach here on WQAM. Always, one of the things that I've long argued for is that I kind of wish that the college and NFL seasons could be split.
This reminds me of your argument last spring about that the NHL and the NBA playoffs should be split.
Yeah, I think the NHL should start 2 months later than they do, so they can have basically 2 months worth of playoff hockey to themselves
on melting ice.
Right. Well, I mean,
I understand. Save the good stuff last.
They played the Stanley Cup Finals in June in Las Vegas.
Right. So what's the difference?
Right. Exactly. What's a few more months on, you know, in hot temperatures? And like, I think hockey would probably engender twice as much attention. Well, not, I mean, attention in terms of like sports talk radio oxygen, like it would be in like exponentially
being
more
away from the NBA playoffs.
Because if you're sort of a radio host in a if you're not in Canada or you're not, you know, in Detroit or somewhere or a place like that, like if you're sitting around going, am I going to talk about the basketball playoffs today or am I going to talk about the hockey playoffs? Like 100 times out of 100, right, you're choosing basketball.
As the ratings bear out.
But if it's July 21st and you're in the post-free agency period and they're, you know, and really all you've got is baseball and whatever is in the news, like you'd probably devote some time to the hockey playoffs in terms of just it's a competitive sporting event
And I understand what you're saying about NFL and college also.
Right.
I hate having to devote a whole weekend to being inside, especially living down here. Yeah.
Sure, yeah. But yeah, particularly when you get into like November and it's gorgeous outside.
Yes.
It's like, I kind of want to be outside. But to me, the reason why, just sort of from a conversational standpoint, is I think I could probably do like the sort of the Victory Monday show or the show where you're just breaking out all the games. Like, I'm just as capable of doing it about college football as I am about the NFL. And like yesterday, the Canes kind of get lost a little bit.
Absolutely.
Because you're talking about the Dolphins home opener, you're talking about the Dolphins season opener, the Canes lost the first weekend, so it's not quite the same level of anticipation, and you're playing a weaker opponent, so it almost entirely gets ignored. The only thing that really broke through was this new turnover chain that gets unveiled, but I think there were some real and legitimately interesting things that happened in that game. As much as you're playing a patsy opponent, you saw all four quarterbacks, you saw the highly touted freshman Lorenzo Lingard really break out and have these ridiculously long runs. And something that we were talking about during the break, all these freshmen that you might not have seen in other circumstances because you want to preserve their redshirt status, you get to see them because there's this new rule that allows them to play up to four games without losing that redshirt status.
Which is totally the opposite of the intent of the rule.
Right.
You remember all these years how these guys, you have to apply to the NCAA for a fifth year. You were injured one or two games in. You barely got any playing time. You want to get the extra year. As a matter of fact, I think guys have even for a sixth year at times applied for it also. And the thought was, okay, the badly injured guy who loses a chance for a meaningful season. Instead, it's become this manipulation, Chris, to the point of, do you play guys in the Savannah State games, or if you're limited to four and your quarterback is injured or struggling in the Pittsburgh game or something like that, do you save them where you can have their redshirt season anyway and contribute in those big games? So I do wonder, with this UM run right now of Savannah State, Toledo, and FIU before the real game start again, do you burn off, with a lot of the players you just mentioned, three of your four usable games? Or is there a strategy to this where you say to yourself, you know what, the football season in any level is a season of attrition. Do you save your four game players for later? Mm-hmm. It's almost like we need this little chart to put little X's next to the name to see if guys can still be red shirts or not. On one hand, it's nice that now as a freshman, you get to feel more part of the team, that you know the opportunity is real and that you're not sitting out the entire season. On the other hand, it's sort of become this whole game within a game right now that when you do the UM pregame shows, you're trying to figure, well, which one of the guys might they play and which one of the guys should you save? And the last thing you'd want to happen, I believe, is to get to the end of the regular season and to get, when you're fighting for the Coastal and to possibly still get into the ACC championship game and realizing you don't have any more games. And all of a sudden, when you play that fifth game, you lose an entire season of that player.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, it's something that I think a lot of coaches probably would like, just because you're getting true freshman reps and preserving their status. I mean, if they're good enough, they're going to leave after 3 years no matter what. But I do wonder, sort of on the opposite point of view, like as much as you're talking about, obviously you're trying to manage it towards you want to preserve that status, but for example, the Hurricanes this year didn't have really, in my opinion, a real quarterback competition because you're dealing with a guy who was always going to earn the trust of the quarter of the coach much more by virtue of the fact that he played in 14 games. He has all this experience, all these reps, and Kosi Perry never got a chance to play in a live game, whereas last year, with this role, he absolutely plays against Bethune-Cookman.
Right.
He probably plays in the home game against Toledo towards the end. They didn't have the Arkansas State game last year, but he would have seen some more action if not for that opportunity. I wonder if it's almost the exact opposite, where Jaren Williams gets to show you, okay, even though you're playing a fairly limited game and you're kind of closing things out, that he has at least the opportunity to show you in a live game setting what it would look like if he was the quarterback. And I think it's giving these players an opportunity to win jobs earlier than they otherwise might have.
And I could see that for this reason. If you play them in two of these games, when you get to those games late in the schedule, if you need someone, at least you'll have confidence you could use them. But I wonder how many of them are going to play in three of these games. That's what I'm trying to say. Before you get to North Carolina, you have this run of everyone knows, even after what happened to LSU, you're going to be 4-1. North Carolina is terrible.
Yeah,
I mean, you're going to wind up with that good record going to Florida State anyway.
And Florida State's terrible. Like, I understand that's a rivalry game. The Miami Hurricanes, for me, don't have a difficult game until they're at Boston College on the 26th of October on a Friday night. And they have 2 weeks off before that. Like, they're again, as you said, at Toledo. I mean, I think at Toledo might be their toughest game in this stretch. I'm not even kidding. Like, a rivalry game against Florida State is a rivalry game, but I mean, you saw what Florida State did this past weekend, what they did on opening night against Virginia Tech. It's not a good team. Toledo might actually be decent, and you're away. I haven't checked the history of Toledo football, but probably the biggest opponent that's ever come to Toledo. And like just as the Hurricanes were the biggest opponent that ever went to Appalachian State a few years ago.
Or were going to go to Arkansas State.
Right, exactly. Like, for whatever reason, they've elected to kind of play these away games. But home North Carolina, it's a short week, but it should be a relatively straightforward game. Home FIU, home Florida State, and at Virginia. Like, Virginia might be the worst team in the ACC Coastal,
and
even with North Carolina.
Georgia Tech was exposed last week against South Florida. And honestly, I've always felt, for whatever reason, I don't know why, the Pittsburgh game, maybe the time of the year for UM sets up as a challenge, but oh my God, what Penn State did to them.
Yeah.
You know, even the little stickler games we thought might be really
aren't.
And
you have that game at home. For me, the only tough game that the Hurricanes have left is at Virginia Tech. It's why people thought that even if they didn't necessarily make a leap forward, that they would have, by record, a good season because... Like,
10-2 was guaranteed.
The schedule is pretty damn soft. Like, once you get past LSU on opening day, and LSU then went out and kind of made that loss look even worse by not even convincingly defeating, it was like Southeast Louisiana or something like that. Like, I think LSU might go 8-4 this year and make that loss look even worse. But I think Miami's got that soft schedule that you're right, though. You wonder if you might have too many. I don't think we're going to be at a stage with this Toledo game where you're going to be throwing your backup quarterbacks in there or your true freshmen unless you really plan on using them for real in games. I think you might see if they're dominating in Kosi Perry because he's already had his redshirt year. So it's like he's losing status. But I do wonder if maybe there might be too many easy games on this Kane schedule, and you're right, they're going to have to manage the snaps of their kind of second and third stringers that are true freshmen if they're still interested in preserving their redshirt status.
And for most of those level of players, you are, because most of these guys, college is the finish line for them anyway, and that's sort of how you're recruiting now also, that you're recruiting 4.5 season players by and large also. So I just think it's an interesting twist that I hope the people who are announcing the games, obviously we know Joe Z and Don Bailey Jr. are going to be totally familiar, but when watching the TV broadcast and the national broadcast, there's sort of an awareness of who can come in, who has time left, who has those four check marks sort of filled out that they're done for their sort of redshirt kind of year. Again, I never thought, you know what? I think what happens, Chris, is this. Because college coaches are all about themselves, not about the injuries and anything, I think eventually it's going to become a 5-year eligibility. You know, it just seems like it's trending that way. Well, if we're giving them 4 seasons and 4 of the games, and it's almost half the season, and they're not playing big minutes anyway, is it more minutes that we're worried about their health and games anyway? And you go in that direction and you just get more time from the kids. Also at a time when a lot of college programs for real students, not to condescend there like I just did,
yeah,
are five-year programs anyway. There's right. a lot more people going to college for their undergrad work, for combined degrees, for things like that for mm-hmm. 5 years. And then you have the whole graduate senior type of situation. The LSU quarterback completed his undergrad in 3 years. So now he's taking one 1-hour class to say he's a college student so he can play college football. Well, is that what the student athlete's right. all about?
Is that what the spirit of this is supposed
yes,
to be?
And there's no spirit of it in college football. It's yeah. it's simply Saturday pro football.
Chris Whittingham, Ara Winterman, in for Joe Rose and Zach Kranz here on QAM.
Radio.com. I feel it.
Chris Whittingham, Ara Winterman, in for Joe Rose and Zach Kranz here on WQAM. Back in a few days. I'm here with Ira tomorrow as well. We'll talk to Randy Cross coming up in the next segment, who's a college football analyst for CBS. Ira, we were talking during the break. I couldn't believe when you reported back to me that Mark Hockman was complaining about how difficult it was to watch the UM game. That's aging before your ears on the radio. That we're probably, I mean, do you remember, like, ESPN has called their streaming platform, like, games available online only, like, four different names. It right. used to be, I think it started as ESPN 360. That was like their web product. Then it was ESPN 3. Now, like, they've got ESPN Plus and right, Watch ESPN yeah. and the ESPN app. Like, it's gone through all these innovations, but streaming games has been a thing for, I would say, from ESPN at the very least, for like more than 10 years. Like, I would assume that it's been more than 10 years worth of games being available to stream.
But the stream to TV is relatively new technology. I was telling you during the break, I have Xfinity, so I actually get the games just regular on my TV now. They added that last week. So to me, watching the UM game was no different than watching any other college game mm-hmm. this weekend. I know for a lot of other people, it meant laptop or phone or something like that, but there certainly are enough ways to connect your laptop or your device to your phone anyway.
The first Apple TV came out in January of 2007. I mean, 11 years is some time to have, like, I'll check when Roku, like, all these, like, understanding that in relative terms, right? In terms of really changing, because that's really what a lot of these companies are asking you to do, is change your habits, right?
Just on your Xbox.
Right.
Just on your gaming platform, right. It's there now
right.
for
all,
you.
All those, right. Like, all these apps are now everywhere, right? But for me, and this is something that, like, I'm fascinated by, like, we're on the radio right now, but the show is available as a podcast. And as a, like, to me, as a podcast, it's an on-demand experience. Like, everything about the experience for me is much more conducive to your routine. But again, routine is something that is such a part of media consumption that I feel like these changes take place over generations, and yet the technology evolves so quickly that you're kind of being asked to make it now, like being asked to make it straight away, that you can't get this game anywhere on linear television. Like, you have to have a streaming product. Now, you were telling me that Comcast offered the game, like, as part of their X1 service.
They're doing that now, which is so much easier.
Right.
I mean, the amount of stuff we have. Matter of fact, I'm waiting for some of your soccer games to show up there. I mean, they have the Women's Soccer League, all
right.
kinds of stuff.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They had the U.S. Open post-game conferences, which mm-hmm. was great because I was able
sure.
to watch Serena Williams
yeah.
after her deal there. And I hate to say it, but there was such a long delay, the Women's Doubles press conference and Coco Vandeweghe. But that's just my little cross to bear. But the amount of stuff right now that even the listings in the newspaper, when they say what's on tonight,
yeah.
there's so much more out there right now
right.
anyway. And you can get it all to your TV.
Yep.
So there's never a night now. I was talking to you about this, where I can't watch one game, and it's a problem, and I understand,
sure.
and I think it annoys my wife when all of a sudden a different game is on. And even last night, they did this wonderful thing, like me, who had to come in and get up at 4:30 this morning, Monday Night Football at 7:10 at night on Monday. What a wonderful idea that the game is actually over at a reasonable hour, and even then I'm looking for something else. And, like, what do you mean the Marlins game's not on? It's rained out. What else can I watch instead? And I'm watching USA Women's Basketball pre-World Cup exhibition game against Japan. That's where I am in my life.
You watch that?
There had to be something else. I cannot sit in front of a game. Can you sit in front of a game and put the remote down?
Or I can't just, I'm actually trying to get better at this. I'm trying to get to a stage where I can sit down in front of the television and just watch the game.
One game.
At one game and not pay attention to anything. Not look at my text, not look at Twitter, not look at
I was talking to Hockman about that also. He says he can't not be on Twitter during games.
Right.
And what confounds me, I bet you saw this also, although football has stops and starts. Mm-hmm. I can't tell you how many times I'm covering an NBA game and fellow reporters, instead of watching the NBA game right in front of our eyes, are watching what other people are tweeting about the NBA game that we're watching instead. It's a crazy dynamic mm-hmm. right now that you can't just do
and
one
yet,
thing.
And to me, the thing that kind of really changes that experience is when, like, the reason why I want to get to a stage where I'm not watching it with Twitter is because I do think that there can be sort of this homogenizing of opinion.
Yes.
Where if we're all watching it in the same experience and someone is, you know, complaining about the officials and like, oh yeah, the officials are terrible because I saw, instead of just like watching the game and coming up with, and that's why.
With your own ideas.
Right. And that's why, like, I think like saying things that are against that consensus now are viewed as contrarian because you get sort of beaten down by this opinion so much. Like I thought about it last night, and for whatever reason, this like I was driving around, I was listening to Bill Simmons' podcast. Like what's funny is that like now we've gotten to a stage where we're constantly looking ahead so much
right.
that they were previewing week two when week one wasn't even over. So they do this thing where they guess the gambling lines. It's him and Cousin Sal from the Jimmy Kimmel Show where it's like, all right, week two, Dolphins are at the Jets. What do you think the line is going to be?
Even though the Jets aren't done playing
yet. The Jets
yet.
Haven't played right. yet, and yet we're already trying because gambling is, we're constantly looking ahead.
And now when you listen to those also, because you told me this, and I do it now mm-hmm. also, including your podcast, mm-hmm. you don't go faster than 1.5 times speed, do you?
No, so I have this thing, I have this app where you can kind of, you can increase the speed like incrementally.
So it's not just 1.5, 2.
Right, and then they have this thing called smart speed, which is like they get rid of pauses and like sort of, like dead spaces in audio, and so it ends up being like 1.4 speed. But like, you know, in terms of going more than like, I know people that like listen at 2x, and it's like I couldn't possibly
no because I was listening to one of yours last week, yeah. and the voice just gets even squeakier at two
right.
times or whatever. Yeah,
right. It just becomes unbearable.
And the
that
other
way.
Thing, and the but, other thing about watching games, sorry to interrupt
yeah, yeah,
here,
yeah.
is I talked to my wife about this also. It used to be when they panned the crowd and they showed people watching their phone, there was almost a disdain from the
right,
real sports
like a
fan.
Judgment.
How dare you not be yeah. watching the game? You should be paying attention. Mm-hmm. You got those seats and I couldn't get in the building. And now I think it's accepted part yeah. of the viewing experience, even live. Now, I know there's other people texting non-sports stuff, is to look down, get the stats, the injury information, the stuff you don't know also. It's almost like you have to have a phone even at the game to watch the game.
And to me, the thing that's kind of become even more widespread is Wi-Fi in the stadium. Like, that used to be...
It used to
be a dead spot, right? Like, where you just kind of went into a stadium and you thought, I'm not going to get cell signal in here because there's 65,000 people trying to use their phone. And I'm not going to be able to see
and
anything that's
Wi-Fi
going on
was
elsewhere.
Reserved for the media, for
right,
the people
exactly.
working there. It was
correct.
A closed network or whatever.
Yeah.
You would call your friend, hey, do you know the password
yeah.
here? You know,
I may or may not have given the press box password to a few friends a few times at various stadiums
sure.
that I've been to. But like, I don't think American Airlines Arena has Wi-Fi that's available to
they
the public.
They do. They did. They started last year.
Oh,
it was
okay.
a little bit sketchy in places, but it's sort of become mm-hmm. the mandatory way of doing it.
Yeah.
And you were telling me a story during one of the breaks now where apparently you can't watch Sunday Ticket or non...
Or use the app.
Use the app to watch other NFL games when you're at an NFL stadium mm-hmm. that it's sort of blocked like
yeah.
Uber drivers are around the airport?
Yeah, I was sat behind Will Manso, who's a big New York Giants fan.
Poor Will Manso.
And he was... I saw him tweet, and it was fun. It was just as you were saying, you're reading Twitter about a game that's happening in front of me. I was reading Twitter from a guy who's sitting right in front of me. And I'm like, I poked him on the show like, Will, can't watch the Giants game. And he's like, this is unbelievable. I can't... So they have geo-blocked... and this is another area where kind of if you're connected to the stadium Wi-Fi,
right.
then it knows you're at the stadium, which it then geo-blocks you from watching other NFL games. It prohibited him from watching NFL Sunday Ticket from the grounds of Hard Rock Stadium because they want you paying attention to the game that's in front of you.
Why?
Or
they
interacting
have your,
with
they
it.
They have your money already.
I don't know.
They got you
in
the stadium.
For whatever reason, like they geo-blocked games that are occurring at the stadium. or that are occurring away from the stadium, right, while you're on the Wi-Fi network or your location is. I wonder if you're like, if you live in Miami Gardens, if you live in like the community that's next to Hard Rock Stadium, right, if you're banned from using Sunday Ticket online. But like for his sake, he's at eight Dolphin home games a year,
right?
And he probably paid a lot of money for Sunday Ticket so he could watch the Giants games. And if he can't watch the Sunday Ticket on his phone or on his iPad or on his computer for half the right, season, then why am I paying for Sunday Ticket?
Well, if you're a Giants fan, it's actually beneficial if you saw any of Sunday's game. That's what I mean. The story of what has happened to Eli Manning, yep, is a remarkable story. That if you live
it's
here,
it's not, it's age.
But the drop from what it was to what, yeah, it is, and they still stood by him. Whenever can you recall an aging quarterback being unceremoniously dumped out of his starting job and then coming back triumphantly after that? Usually the moment when it happens, whether it's a Brett Favre or someone like that, mm-hmm, it's over. It's done with that team. I mean, you might go somewhere else, like Peyton Manning, but it's done with your team. And instead, the guy we benched, nah, he's good enough. Nah, he's not good enough. And now their future is, yeah, absolutely stunted there. So I think
when they could have had the quarterback who's now playing in the same stadium for,
yes,
the team wearing green,
yes, Sam Darnold,
like, they could have just as easily made that pick
on a very good quarterback draft. So yeah, I think really the NFL is doing a favor to Will Manso. But the whole thing about watching, yeah, one game,
yeah,
I can't do it anymore.
I'm trying, man.
I can't even do it at Heat games. Matter of fact, Doug Plagans was here the other day when I was in here, and I told him I usually watch the Panthers game also. I hate the fact that the Heat have like 35 conflicts with, yeah, the Panthers. But
they really should work that out together.
Like they don't play in the same arena. Here's the problem. There are so many hockey teams that play in the same arena as the NBA team, mm-hmm, Boston, Chicago, Denver, New York,
Los Angeles,
that they have to take care of those cities first.
Sure.
Because you can't both play home,
right,
games,
exactly,
because,
yeah,
you'd be skating on top of the basketball players. So they get the priority, and then markets like us that do, because all we do is build arenas, they wind up having with these conflicts. It's incredible how many times I'm monitoring the Panthers score,
yeah,
when the Heat are playing also, because they have an interest in both teams. But just to watch one thing, I mean, I'm telling you, there were nights like, mm-hmm, last night, I'm saying, okay, the Jets game is on. It's a little lopsided. What else am I going to watch? I don't have the baseball league package, mm-hmm, because my wife draws the line at a certain point. So I'm just surfing for anything. The point I almost got to was watching the replay of the golf that was delayed until Monday, and I said, that's when I got to draw the line.
Chris Whittingham, Ira Winderman, in for Joe Rose and Zach Kranz. We're talking to Randy Cross of CBS next.
Radio.com. Radio.com.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.